Hello and welcome to this month's Football Fans Podcast, The Shootout, where we speak to a fan or former player one-on-one and have a little bit less debate and do a little bit more digging with our particular guest. On the FFP The Shootout this month, I'm joined by the former Chelsea and Leicester and Jamaican international defender, Frank Sinclair. Frank, how you doing, man?
I'm good, Jordan. How are you?
I'm well, mate. I'm well. Thank you very much for coming on the FFP The Shootout. Before we talk football, Frank, I was reading up on you, and I read that you're a former, or you're from Lambeth, born and raised. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, I was born and raised in Brixton, stroke Clapham. You know, I grew up in Clapham, so South London boy at heart. But I went to school actually in West London. I went to Pimlico School. Obviously, the area was quite rough at the time, and my mum made a great decision basically to get me the other side of the water where, you know, she could keep me out of trouble, which, you know, it ended up being a good decision because I went to Pimlico School, which was a good school. And, you know, it was very sports orientated as well. So the football side of things gave me, you know, a great opportunity to pursue what I wanted to do.
Well, listen, from one Brixtonite born and raised to another, thank you very much for coming on the FFP, man. For those that, our international and even national listeners and subscribers, Lambeth, Brixton is it's part of South London in the UK, just so people were wondering where the hell Lambeth is. Frank, let's talk about something more topical before we get on to you. Yesterday, Chelsea is, I must let our listeners know, this is going out on the Easter Monday, the day after Chelsea were defeated by Tottenham 3-1. Frank, I know that you work for Chelsea TV. I don't know if you're working on the game yesterday, but you're not with Chelsea TV now. So be honest, going into that game, did you have genuine fears and concern that you were gonna win that game? Or were you confident in the fact that the form wasn't great, but you always beat Spurs at home?
Yeah, well, it's a double-edged sword, really, because obviously, you know, we've had great history with games against Spurs, especially at Stamford Bridge. I think it was nearly over 30 years since the last time they actually won at Stamford Bridge and took all 3 points. So that would bring you a confidence. But obviously, you know, the form Tottenham's been in this season, we knew it was going to be a serious game that, you know, if we realistically wanted to finish in the top four, it was a game that had to take all 3 points out of, which quite confident we were capable of doing. But to be honest with you, you know, Tottenham were better from half time onwards and deserved the win. I thought Chelsea started the game fairly well, you know, and closed Spurs down and kept Dele Alli out of the game. But second half, you know, Tottenham made some changes to the system they played, and I thought it affected the game and they got the result they deserved in the end.
Is that top four done for Chelsea, would you say?
I think so. You know, you'd probably have to win every game between now and the end of the season and expect other teams to drop points. And to be honest with you, I can't really see that happening, which is very disappointing. Obviously, being the champions and defending the title, to not finish in the top four is a massive concern. And, you know, I think, you know, the recruitment has to be looked at. You know, I don't think, you know, as champions, I don't think we've recruited well and kicked on like the likes of Man City have in the summer. And I think we paid the price because of that.
Right, I want to talk about you now, Frank. You're one of the senior coaches at Ratcliffe, is that correct?
Yes, yeah, I'm first team assistant manager, which is Ratcliffe Borough, well, former Ratcliffe Borough, but now Ratcliffe FC, been renamed with the new owners coming into the club. And, you know, it was a strange one, really, because I've had various different roles in non-league football in the past, and it wasn't really a route that I was looking to go back down again. But obviously the manager, John Macken, is someone I've known very well. I helped to get into coaching formerly at Oldham Athletic when I was there as the manager of the under-16s. John came in to help out at Oldham, and then I went on to non-league management. And obviously it was his first job, and he thought of me coming in to help him out. A big part of that was Kevin Campbell being involved with the ownership side of the football club. You know, Kevin's business partner bought the club, and Kevin has a big say in, you know, where the club's going forward. And obviously I've known Kevin another lad who's a former Lambeth boy, born and bred Brixton himself. I've known him all my life. So it was a case of the trust issues was there, you know, looking above with the leadership of the football club. And, you know, we've got a job on our hands at the minute. We're fighting a relegation battle. But once we get through that, which I think we'll comfortably do, you know, there's finances that would be pumped into the club to kick on and hopefully go through the leagues.
I know you were also the under-23s manager at Stoke, and you mentioned the work you did at Oldham as well there. Alongside the stuff, you work in the media now as a pundit. Is management something that in an ideal world you would really love to kind of pursue at a higher level, or are you quite content at the level you're managing now and juggling that alongside your media commitments?
No, 100%. I've worked at Chelsea for close to 5 years now, working with the TV and analysing games and doing the commentary in games and doing pre and post shows. And it's something I love doing, but, you know, realistically and ideally for me, you know, I'd love to be in full-time management at a higher level. It's very difficult to break through sometimes, and, you know, sometimes you can get typecasted as, because you've been in non-league for so long, which was a reason why I didn't really want to go back to that. You know, I had a taste of being in a really professional environment, you know, working alongside Glenn Hodges with the under-23s at Stoke City. And it was more me, you know. I've grown up in the professional game, full-time game. So that's where I'm looking to get back to eventually. But sometimes you have to just take baby steps to get to where you want to. But for me, you know, I think being adaptable is something that you need to be in football. And I've coached at various levels, like I've said, youth level. You know, I've done under 12s at Oldham for a season. Then I went on to under 16. Then I've done the under 23s. I've been a first team manager at, you know, at senior level as well. So I think you need that variation in the game, because you never know what's around the corner. So, you know, definitely my ambition is to coach and manage at a higher level, and, you know, I'm just working on getting there.
One of the big things at the moment now, Frank, in football regarding management is the lack of diversity in the game. I've had Marcus Gale and who's my first guest, Carlton Palmer, on the FFP Shootout in the last couple of months, and I've brought up the subject of the Rooney Rule, and they both have very opposing views on whether they're for it and against it. Carlton wasn't for it. Marcus Gale was for it. The FA have announced that they will be obviously having have introduced it in regards to the England roles for all the England teams, from the senior team down to the disabled teams, the junior teams and the women's teams. What's your view? Are you a fan, first of all, of the Rooney Rule? And do you feel that you have not maybe got the opportunities that you feel you maybe should have had because of the colour of your skin?
To be honest with you, I'm a fan of the Rooney Rule. I think it gives opportunity, you know, to black managers, etc., or different cultured managers to get an opportunity to be in the game, and it's all about building a reputation. And if you don't get that opportunity that the Rooney Rule may give you, even if it's sitting down in front of people and getting this interview process, I believe it's moving in the right direction, because you're sitting in front of people, you're getting the experience of these interviews that you may not get without it, and you'll be able to build a reputation. Whether you get the job or not, I know how it works at board level, and they all talk to each other. You know, different football clubs talk to each other about, you know, the interview process with different managers. And sometimes your name may crop up in a conversation just from the back of having a really successful interview, whether you've got the job or not. So for me, I think the Rooney Rule is something that it's seen to have worked in America. And I think if it's pushed on, it gives diversity an opportunity to, you know, stake a claim for a job and get that experience of being in interviews. So for me personally, I don't think I've experienced a situation where I've certainly not got a job because I've been black. I've been quite fortunate to be in quite a few interviews, been very close to, you know, higher level jobs, but not quite got them for various reasons. And for me, you know, you have to just have faith in that people are being honest with you. And the reason you haven't got it is you don't quite fit for that job, but someone else does. But, you know, the feedback I've always had off my interviews have been very promising. And I think that puts me in a better position going forward when another opportunity, if and when that comes up.
That's interesting. The current England manager, Gareth Southgate, is a big advocate. Well, he was the under-21s manager before he got the senior job. And he's a very big advocate of bringing through young talent. Chelsea, your club, have been criticised over the years, had a really bad press over the years for not developing young players. You do that very, very well, it seems. But it's that kind of that conduit between developing young players and getting them into the first team. Do you feel Chelsea do get too much heat for the lack of young players that come through the academies into the first team? Or do you feel that Chelsea are actually failing those youngsters by not ensuring that more make it through into the first team?
No, I think it's a bit of a victim of your own success, really, because the academy obviously proves year in, year out that they've probably got the best young players, developing the best young players in Europe. You know, they're always in and around winning the European competitions at academy level. You know, they're very successful with the FA Youth Cup every year. And more often than not, you know, they win the leagues that they're in as well at all levels. So, you know, the success is there as in bringing the talent through. But obviously there is a pathway that is struggling to be made to get them into the first team. For me, I think it's down to not having consistency with managers. If you look at, you know, the history of the football club, you know, managers don't last longer than two, maybe three seasons. Now, if every time a new manager comes in and he's got to prove his worth as a manager, he's going to go with experience. He's going to go with players. He's going to bring in the ready-made players to be successful as a manager. He can't afford to take chances on young kids and give them, you know, the 18 months they need to adapt to playing first team football. And the problem with that is, you know, if you'd had a manager like, for example, Sir Alex Ferguson at Man United, he's had the time to bring young players through and had the patience to let them, you know, grow into being first team players. At Chelsea, you know, you change your managers every two or three seasons. The manager's under pressure to bring, you know, silverware or success to the football club straight away. And they're not going to look at doing that with youngsters, because they'll look at it and marry up that with the time span they've got and think, well, I can't afford to wait 12 to 18 months for this player to develop into what we know he can be. And that's why they use the loan system to their benefit to bring through players. And you look at someone like Andreas Christensen this season, who's been away on loan for 2 years. He comes back ready-made. He goes straight into the first team. So I don't think it's a factor of Chelsea not wanting these youngsters to get into the team. It's just that time frame of waiting for them to be ready to play. I don't think Chelsea have got the right manufactured way of doing it, because managers change at the top level. Managers change at the club too consistently.
I see. I want to talk about Jamaica, this summer's World Cup, and modern-day defenders in a minute as well. But just finally on Chelsea, Frank, there was a big uproar 6 months ago or so regarding the situation with some allegations made against some of the coaches, with some, let's just call it, failure of duty of care allegations. You were very outspoken in kind of supporting those said coaches and saying that that wasn't the experience that you had experienced when you were within the Chelsea system. Just tell us a little bit about what your experiences coming through at Chelsea were like in comparison to the allegations that were made against some of those coaches from back in the day.
Yeah, well, you know, different people are going to have different opinions of what the coaches were trying to do. Now, I saw it as being at a club which was, you know, renowned for having, you know, a strong racism problem. When I was growing up as a kid, you know, you don't forget, I watched Chelsea play from the age of 9 before I even joined the club. I was a fan watching Chelsea at the football club. So I experienced that racism firsthand as being, you know, in the shed end, etc. And sometimes, you know, it's very concerning and obviously a threatening environment to be in. So I understood certain coaches at the club preparing you for that, but done in a joking way, not an aggressive way. You know, there's certainly things that you don't think you'd be able to get away with now in this day and age in football. I agree with that. At the time, I think, you know, there were certain things that were swept under the carpet. And, you know, there was a way about doing things then that you certainly can't do with duty towards kids in this day and age. And I agree with that. But, you know, for me, I just think it's disappointing for players to be coming out 20, 30 years later and coming with these reasons of why they didn't make it as footballers. It would be very interesting to me if there was a successful footballer at the likes of a Chelsea or wherever it might be, a different football club that was successful in his career and then came out with this allegations. So for me, sometimes you look at it and you think you're a bit sceptical that, are you using that as an excuse for you not making it as a top flight footballer? So I was certainly just backing the likes of, you know, the people that were accused, because I had experience of working with them and was treated probably better than a lot of people that was at the football club, regardless of your colour, because they saw that I had a talent and I had an opportunity that I could make it at the club. So I could only speak for how I was dealt with at the club, and I can't really speak for others.
Have things improved enough to your standard? Do you think things have changed significantly enough, or is there still a lot of work to do at Chelsea and generally in football?
No, 100%, I think it's improved. I think it's something that's been taken care of from the FA downwards, that, you know, you really can't get away with that sort of any type of discrimination in football now. And the best thing about it now is 20 to 30 years ago, there wasn't a voice. There wasn't people. You were scared to come out and say, you know, this is happening to me, etc. But I certainly think now that the players that are, you know, that are growing up in the game, they certainly won't stand for it. They will have a voice. They will speak their voice because they know that they'll get the support that they need. So I think, obviously, you know, it is down to cultures and down to history, really, and where racism comes from. And you're never going to get rid of it 100%. But, you know, I certainly think it's in a lot better state than, for example, when I was growing up as a young teenager in the game.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk Jamaica now, Frank. You got 28 caps for Jamaica. One of my big bugbearers, Frank, is when players do this thing where they need time to work out whether they want to play for this country or that country. And it just seems to me, I mean, it probably is the case that they're deciding which are the best career choices in terms of, okay, I can probably get more caps with that country where my dad's from, but that country where my grand's from, I can make more money, I can get a higher profile. And it just seems a little bit impersonal to me, and it doesn't feel like people are picking the countries where they love and feel most aligned to. Why did you pick Jamaica over England? You could have played for England, is that correct?
Yes. Obviously, I'm born in London, so I could have played for England. But I looked at it on a personal situation where, you know, I was playing for one of the best teams in the country, winning things regularly, playing week in, week out. And I didn't think I was getting any type of recognition with England, not even spoken about being in teams, etc. And for me, it was frustrating because I thought I was good enough. You know, when I looked at the players that were playing in around me, Gary Neville at Man United and other players that played the same sort of positions as me, I certainly thought I was good enough to play. So
it was Hoddle in charge at the time, was it? Then Hoddle was the manager around the time that you could have had some England caps. Yeah, is that correct?
Yeah, well, I suppose Glenn Hoddle, Terry Venables before that. Yeah. I mean, I got called into a couple of squads to sort of like fill numbers up for injuries, but not officially called into squads. So I trained with the England team and done very well when I went and applied myself there. But then nothing came of it. So I just thought to myself, I was at a stage where I'm 26, I'm in the prime of my career, playing in top flight football, playing in European football. So I had the experience of European football as well, and not getting any recognition from England whatsoever. So the option for me came, I didn't go looking for the option. The option for me came along when basically, you know, I had my agent ring me and said Jamaica were interested in me joining the team if they qualified for the World Cup. So, you know, I obviously looked at it and thought, well, how many opportunities am I going to get to play in the World Cup again for the rest of my career? You know, at the age of 26, the next World Cup coming around, I'd be 30. Probably no chance of getting in the England squad from there. So I just thought to myself, it was an opportunity that I couldn't turn down. But the biggest thing for me was the questions that I had to ask the manager was, you know, how would the rest of the Jamaican team feel about English-based players coming after they'd done so well to qualify and obviously probably replace players that worked their socks off to get Jamaica to that situation? You know, I felt, you know, would there be a problem with the group because of the English-based players that they were looking to bring in to strengthen the team? And, you know, I was assured that from the manager, René Simões, who was a Brazilian manager with great international experience, I was assured that these players were prepared for this a long time ago. So there wouldn't be a problem with that, which obviously kept my mind at rest and made me feel, well, if I'm going to be welcomed into the group with my experience of my football that I've played, it's going to help the group and it's going to give Jamaica a better chance of being successful at the World Cup, whatever you see success as when we got there. So obviously as well, you know, speaking to my parents and my brothers and my sisters and that, who were a different generation to me. There was a 10-year gap between myself and my older brother and sister. So, you know, their Jamaican heritage was probably a lot stronger than mine, and how proud they were going to be about me representing the country of my mother's land. So for me, it wasn't a difficult decision to make. And I thoroughly enjoyed the fact that I did do that, because I don't think I would have gotten experience of going to a World Cup otherwise.
That's interesting. You mentioned the World Cup there, this summer's World Cup. It's in Russia, and there's obviously lots of implications and inferences of how many people who are not white and Western, should we say, will be received on that land. Do you feel that if stuff does kick off and there are racial tensions during games, would you like to see a bigger responsibility placed on white players on taking action if abuse is heard and hauled from fans and the players? Do you think we're at the point now where if something happens during a game, whether it's a fan shouting something, a player says something, black players, I feel, should just walk off the pitch. I know there are implications with that as well, but I feel black players should just walk off the pitch. But there are more white players than black players there. And if white players are serious about combating this fight against racism, would you like to see more white players think, you know what, sod it. There are implications and consequences to what I'm about to do, but we've got to take a stand and they should walk off the pitch as well.
Yeah, 100%. I believe that it's a stronger message if you are united in taking actions against whatever situation that may crop up in the World Cup. I think if it's just black players going off, it doesn't send that message that it's just a target and it's affecting just black players. But it's not. It's affecting football in the whole. And it's affecting not only just football in the whole, it's affecting young kids that are watching this happening that see it as maybe acceptable as they grow up. Mm-hmm. If everybody walks off the pitch, it sends a message that, you know, we won't stand for this in football. The black players won't stand for this in football. Football won't stand for it. And I think it sends a massive message. I remember many years ago when Paul Cannavale was obviously the first black player to play for Chelsea and was getting verbally abused by supporters and stuff thrown at him, i.e. bananas, etc. And Pat Nevin was a Scottish player that played for Chelsea at the time, was the first person to make a stance against it and refuse to play in games if this was going to continue. That sent a bigger message than Paul Cannavale actually making a complaint about it himself. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of situation has to be shown again.
Brilliant. Just a couple more, Frank. Six own goals I've researched from yourself at the top level. How many were your fault?
I'll probably claim one of them. One of them. The one against Leicester City for Chelsea at home. The rest of them were the goalkeeper's fault.
Fair enough.
I have that argument all the time with goalkeepers that I used to play with. But it's all fun and games. Listen, when you're a defender and you're prepared to put yourself at risk just to stop the ball from going in the back of the net, sometimes you get it wrong. But it's something that you take on the chin. And if you're confident enough in your own ability, you know that you can bounce back from that. And sometimes it's not about the mistakes you make in football. It's about how you respond to it.
you played during the days at Chelsea where there was the boards behind the goals and that there was the whole big reconstruction of the ground to what we see now. Back in that day, who was the most underrated player you'd say you played with? Who was the one player you played with that maybe didn't get the attention and the person that, but you thought this is, he's a really good player, but doesn't get the kind of the accolades and the kind of credit that maybe he deserves?
Yeah, the first person that comes to mind of that is probably Eddie Newton, who's someone I grew up with playing football from a very young age. I think we started playing football together at the age of 11, went all the way through the district team playing for West London and London together. And, you know, obviously his Chelsea career sort of mirrored mine, being the same age and in the same youth teams and into the reserves at the same time and that. And but for a few injuries that probably cost him vital moments in his career, I think he would have played for England. You know, for me, there was talk about, you know, how good Paul Ince was for England as a defensive midfielder or combative midfielder. For me, Eddie Newton at the same time was on the same par as him. And it was only really until Ruud Gullit took over as manager that he got the recognition that he should be playing international football, really. But you know, he just had bad injuries at bad times that sort of like stopped that from happening. But certainly as a player, you know, Eddie had everything. He was a defensive midfield player, but he could score goals. I remember once we were losing 1-0 away at Tottenham at White Hart Lane, and he went from midfield to up front and scored 2 goals in the last 20 minutes to win us a game. So he had all sorts of, he had great ability, you know, and could do everything. And he was one player that's still at the football club in charge of the loan system, been very much a big part of the development of the young players at Chelsea now, still there doing that. And yeah, he was probably one of the most underrated players I played with.
You played under Gianluca Vialli at Chelsea as well, Frank. What happened to him? Where did he go? Because it always baffles me that he won a couple of trophies or a few trophies at Chelsea, and he seemed to be doing pretty well. And then when he left Chelsea, correct me if I'm wrong, he didn't go on to manage any other clubs. And he just seemed to just kind of fade away. And I saw him once during one of the previous, what I think it was a South African World Cup. He did some punditry for the BBC. And I thought he was absolutely brilliant. He was brilliant, Frank. Really insightful. Spoke really well. Knew his stuff. I was really impressed. And it's always bugged me. And I always wondered, what's happened to Gianluca Vialli? Do you know why he seemed to quit coaching?
No, I couldn't answer that. You'd have to ask him. But certainly as a person, Gianluca was a top guy. You know, when he took over at Chelsea, he didn't change as a person, but he just became a manager that could get the best out of people because of his likability. And you know, why he didn't go on and manage and make a true career out of it, maybe he just didn't see that as for him. You know, he was quite a reserved type of character anyway, so you know, sometimes you need a certain type of makeup within you that makes you, you know, fit being a manager. And some people have got it and some people haven't. And you know, it doesn't mean that you know, your knowledge of the game is not as good as others and stuff, but you just have to have a certain makeup and a thick skin about you and an ability to bounce back from adversity, because more often than not, at some stage as a manager, you're going to get the sack or you're going to have tough times. Some people can deal with it, some can't.
Yeah, fair enough. And just finally, Frank, as I mentioned, you're a pundit for Chelsea TV. What, in your view, makes a good pundit? What are the key elements to, because a lot of my friends, we talk about some of the good pundits, some of the really bad pundits, and most people have kind of different things which they want from their football pundits. And I think to some degree, you sometimes can't really win, because no matter what you say, someone's going to disagree and that will kind of interpret as you're a crap pundit.
I think first and foremost, the honesty. You know, you've got to speak your mind and say how it is, regardless of who you're working for. You obviously need a certain knowledge of the game, which you can get either through like sort of education or through your experience of being a player. But you know, you need to be able to speak well. You need to be able to put your point across so that people that may not know the game understand what you're saying. Because you know, if you say things in a football term, sometimes the man sitting on the armchair won't understand them terms. So you need to be able to, and which I think, you know, the likes of Gary Neville is very good at doing. They make you understand what they're saying. Thierry Henry is another one as well. He has a simplicity in the way that he explains things that, you know, the person next door, whether they've played football or not, understand what he's on about.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's the key elements that you need.
Frank, thank you for your time, man. Have a good Easter.
Yeah, you too. Cheers, Jordan. Cheers, take care.